This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Hundreds of mysterious lung illnesses are now documented across the country. Patients show up to emergency rooms with chest pain and issues with breathing, and some have suffered acute respiratory failure. At least five people have been reported to have died. There's concern that the illnesses may be linked to vaping, and now the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are urging people not to use e-cigarettes. Joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about it are University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and Thoracic Surgeon, Dr. Julian Quitron. Welcome back, Julian.
Thanks for having me.
We have on the phone with us West Virginia University Professor of Medicine, Radiology, and Public Health, and the former Chief of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine, Dr. Jack Parker. Welcome, Jack.
Well, good afternoon.
And later, we'll be joined by a member of the vaping industry, Ray Story. We'd like to hear from you as well. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Jack, we'll start with you. We're hearing references to lung illnesses, and that seems rather vague. You can read into the stories a little bit and get some further details about the symptoms, but what exactly is it that these patients are showing?
Yes, you know, the lungs are one of the organs in the chest that help us with gas exchange, help us take in oxygen, eliminate carbon dioxide. And they're a very vulnerable organ to inhaled toxins or agents that may be injurious. So if you get pneumonia, you may be short of breath. We usually think of pneumonia as an infectious lung disease. But there may be other inhaled dusts, gas fumes, mists, or vapors that make people ill. And the primary symptom is shortness of breath or cough.
At what point are you seeing patients come in reporting shortness of breath or a cough? People who smoke or people who vape are probably coughing on occasion, but at what point are you finding that they think they've got a problem worth reporting?
Right. So certainly people can get chronic lung disease from a number of exposures, be it coal dust or silica or asbestos in the workplace or tobacco smoke. And the chronic diseases happen over years. What's making these current little outbreak or huge outbreak or epidemic of respiratory diseases unusual is that these are acute illnesses where people may be sick for only a few days or a few hours until they present to emergency rooms or the doctor's offices with their symptoms. Again, mostly shortness of breath, cough, and sometimes chest pain. So the difference is it's a shorter duration of illness than most of the chronic diseases that we may associate with other environmental exposures.
So are we seeing then similarities in all these patients that they're all reporting coughing, shortness of breath?
Well, certainly they're all short of breath ultimately, especially those that need admission to the hospital and require either supplemental oxygen or are so ill that they end up on a ventilator, a life-sustaining form of life support called mechanical ventilation has been required in a number of these patients. So their symptom, again, has been just this profound shortness of breath. And many times if you test oxygen with pulse oximetry or other testing, you find that their oxygen levels are dangerously low.
Julian, what do we know?
And then their chest x-rays are abnormal with sort of an excessive amount of whiteness on the x-ray and can look like a garden variety infectious pneumonia, but when they test for infections, traditional infections have not been present.
And Julian, what do we know
Michael,
about?
Michael, you were starting to ask me something. Sorry.
No, I apologize. I'm gonna move it over to Julian for just a moment. We'll come back to you after that, Jack. Julian, what do we know about the demographic makeup of these patients across the country so far?
That's one of the shocking findings, that these are previously healthy young patients, 18 to 35 years of age, that have no reason to be in the condition they're in at that point in time. And like you mentioned, 450 cases now reported. And now a lot of attention is being paid to, very appropriately so, this is a very difficult situation that involves young, otherwise healthy patients, very nonspecific signs and symptoms, shortness of breath, chest pain. I mean, that's pretty much the bulk of what the emergency departments see on a daily basis. And then you have the rampant use of vaping in the population that is not targeted to, which is the youth population.
So what's the difference, Julian, when comparing the illnesses that may be connected to vaping, when you think about the illnesses that are more commonly connected to traditional cigarette smoking as it relates to younger people? Because it seems that the common knowledge is that, sure, smoking may be bad for your health, but you usually have to smoke for a long time before you start to see real serious repercussions. I know you're a doctor and you may disagree with that more shallow explanation, but if these are younger people, you have to assume that they've not been vaping that long and they're experiencing significant health problems that may be connected to this.
Absolutely. For the combustion cigarette, the traditional smoking, you're right in that it develops emphysema, COPD over time, and patients experience a degradation of their breathing ability over time. So they sure have exacerbations, but it's all within the framework. With the vaping-related lung issue or pneumonitis, It's at an acute episode of somebody who's previously totally healthy. It's a reaction to something that has not been determined yet, and there's so many components to the e-cigarette that it's like many, many parts to the puzzle, and right now there's no knowledge as to which component is triggering this acute reaction that has ended up in five deaths now.
I read on Fox News the following, quote, New York State, which has reported 34 cases of severe lung disease, said its health department is investigating vitamin E acetate, which is found in both nicotine and THC-based products. That's a reference to marijuana. Vitamin E acetate is a commonly available nutritional supplement, and while it's not known to cause harm when ingested as a vitamin supplement or applied to the skin, the health effects of inhaling the oil are unclear. So, Jack, as that report indicates, vitamin E is something we see all the time as an ingredient in products like moisturizers or lotions, and it's certainly present in many of the foods that we safely consume. So why is vitamin E perceived as problematic or as a possible link in these lung illnesses?
Yeah. As you pointed out, if you apply vitamin E oils or vitamin E acetate oils to the skin or ingest them or eat them, they have at times nutritional value. But the body's not designed to have certain oils and other things inhaled into the delicate tissues within the lungs. So it's very different than putting it on your skin where the epidermis is quite thick, maybe dry, and the moisture is beneficial, or very different to ingesting it where then your body absorbs it slowly, has a chance to go also to the liver for certain detoxification, and then many times just the incorporation of the nutrition into the body's health as opposed to adverse health. So the concern is whether the vitamin E or vitamin E acetate may only be a marker for the presence of the oil. It may or may not be the toxic agent itself. But again, the lungs are just not designed to inhale oil. We know that older adults and younger children can sometimes inhale or aspirate mineral oil, and they get an oily-based pneumonia called a lipoid pneumonia, again, different than infectious pneumonia. And that historically was one of the only ways that we understood about lipoid pneumonia, which was a mineral oil. So I would say that who knows if it's going to be the vitamin E acetate itself that's toxic or if it's just a surrogate marker for an oil.
Julian, that Fox News report referenced both nicotine and THC-based products. Do we know anything about the breakdown of the patients and wish of those products that they were consuming?
We don't know all the details. And like I mentioned, so many different components. It's very difficult to clarify which one it is. Only about 7% of the patients so far, and this is not just in New York, but countrywide in the 33 states involved, smoked or vaped with nicotine exclusively. Everybody else had a combination of the cannabinoid inhalation. And so right now it's very difficult to tease which element is responsible for this. And, you know, you're not supposed to put any cannabinoid products into the e-cigarette.
We're hearing about these cases pop up all across the country. I'm wondering, Julian, if you could help us understand exactly how that works within the medical industry when doctors start to see cases like this emerge. How do healthcare networks and healthcare professionals start to communicate with one another about what they're seeing so as to identify potential trends?
It depends on the impact that the phenomenon that we're observing has on our patients. it can go from an unusual presentation of a case, and I think Dr. Parker is perfect here to talk to us a little bit about his experience as he reported this 4 years ago or so on one patient. But when it's multiple patients, then it triggers red flags that really make it all the way to the CDC. Reporting to the CDC is rare. I mean, you have to be facing a situation where there's clear and present danger to the population in general. And so you want to report that case so that the CDC can continue to do the investigations, which is at this point what's happening. CDC, FDA, everybody's deployed right now doing very active investigations and piecing things together.
And Jack, as Julian just said, in 2015, you linked a mysterious lung illness to vaping. Can you tell us what happened then and how you were able to make the connection?
Yeah. Again, the tip-off for my group, and I was by no means the only individual participating in her diagnostic and therapeutic workup, but a young woman presented with what looked like a bacterial or viral pneumonia, and all of the studies showed no infection, but showed evidence of oil in the lungs or a lipoid pneumonia. And then with her history of vaping, we became concerned that maybe that was the cause. And so once you rule out other causes, you may be left with the unusual early recognition of one of these cases. In addition to the lipoid pneumonia, we also saw an alveolar hemorrhage syndrome in a gentleman who'd been using an e-cigarette product with or without adulterated additions or substances. So many times you'll hear people talk about the secret is in the sauce or the homebrew. So there is extensive concern as to whether it's the commercially available product alone or additives that may be happening from individuals. But Julian's absolutely right. You sometimes may have a case report in the clinical literature that would be viewed as a sentinel health event. And then you may have a clustering of cases, which raises even more concern, and then might get the attention of the State Health Department, CDC, FDA, Consumer Product Safety Commission, industry. Lots of people become concerned once there's a cluster of cases. And 450 strongly exceeds a cluster and certainly is suggesting an epidemic.
Have you seen any cases between the 2015 case and this cluster that we're seeing now?
Yes, we have seen, as I said, alveolar hemorrhage syndrome, lipoid pneumonia, an ARDS problem, and an eosinophilic pneumonia. So I think we're going to find there at least three or four different types of lung reactions to whatever the substance or substances that are causing this. In addition to the kind of individual use, we participate in some national and international studies of inhalation injuries, and so there are episodes in Spain and episodes throughout the U.S. of workers who've gotten flavoring-related lung disease and nylon flock-related lung disease and a crazy name, syndrome artisteal, or a bronchiolitis obliterans.
If you have questions or comments,
there are precedences in the workplace, I guess, is what I'm saying, in addition to these individual environmental exposures.
If you have questions or comments about vaping and these mysterious lung illnesses that are popping up across the country, you can join our conversation today, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Coming up, we'll be joined by a representative of the e-cigarette industry. He will talk about the industry's response to these reports. And a little later, we look at the plans of Churchill Downs to put a new $200 million racetrack somewhere in northern Kentucky, and why Florence-based Turfway Park is not happy about it. Plus, how Claremont County is raising awareness about suicide prevention. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Lung illnesses, sending people to the emergency room across the country triggering warnings from the CDC about e-cigarettes and vaping. We continue now with University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and Thoracic Surgeon Dr. Julian Guitron, West Virginia University Professor of Medicine, Radiology, and Public Health, and the former Chief of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine, Dr. Jack Parker. And now we're joined via Skype by Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association founder and CEO Ray Story. Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Ray, you've been listening in on our conversation so far. I'm wondering how the e-cigarette industry is handling or responding to these reports about lung illnesses. Ray, are you there? And maybe we've lost Ray for just a moment, and we'll try to reconnect and pose that question to him there. And let's just return to Dr. Jack Parker and Dr. Julian Guitron. Dr. Parker is on the phone with us, and Dr. Guitron is here in the studio with me. Julian, I'm wondering about vaping in general from the perspective of a medical professional. We know that cigarettes are frowned upon by the health community. What is the typical role or position of medical professionals when it comes to vaping?
Vaping or e-cigarettes have become an important element, one of the multiple elements needed to quit smoking. And for us, of course, that is a main goal, to really decrease the smoking incidence. The combustion cigarette has so many combustion byproducts and carcinogens that definitely our ability to transition to smoking cessation, in some cases via an e-cigarette, it's definitely proven to be a great aid. The problem is when it gets out of hand, and now the target population is the non-smoking elder or older population, and you're targeting high school or even elementary school kids, which is what has us in this problem as we are today.
And Jack, I know you're not a physician, but what do physicians typically do when they have a patient who's just in for a general checkup, but they're a smoker? Is it typically advised to them that they stop?
Yeah, smoking cessation is advised strongly in both the primary care world as well as the specialty world of cardiology and pulmonary medicine, and certainly in cancer clinics because of the multiple risk factors, long-term health problems with smoking.
Yes. Does that same attitude accompany those who are just in for a general checkup and otherwise good health but express that they do engage in vaping?
I think the vaping has resulted in a different discussion sometimes around the world. There are some nations who've embraced vaping as a potential alternative to combustion products, and also maybe as a segue to smoking cessation. The concern, as Julian's been mentioning, is that some people may use it as their entry into nicotine addiction.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join us. Let's go to the phones now. We have Donald on the line. Hi, Donald. What's your question or comment?
I wanted to say that the fundamental problem, of course, is the nicotine addiction. And both the University Hospital, Christ Hospital, and Good Sam have free smoking cessation clinics.
Donald, we thank you so much for the call. Just reminding people that there are smoking cessation opportunities available that probably do not involve vaping if that's an alternative that you don't find attractive. But what about the vaping, Julian, that doesn't include nicotine? That is a product that's available if you just like the flavor of something, a menthol flavor, or maybe just the taste of tobacco, but you don't want the nicotine involved. Do we know if any of those types of substances have been involved in the reported cases of mysterious lung illnesses?
Unfortunately not, but it'll be interesting to know that up to 70% of teenagers or even high schoolers find that they use vaping simply because of the flavor. So you're right. It may be a very innocent way of getting introduced into the vaping scene. But pretty soon, you can start adding some nicotine. You like that rush that you get from the nicotine. And rather than going in a progressive decrease fashion with the nicotine to stop smoking, they go the other way. They start increasing the dose to the point where the maxed out e-cigarette is not fulfilling their needs, and they transition into combustion cigarettes. That's the tragedy that we're actually facing nowadays, where we're seeing e-cigarettes as a gateway for traditional combustion cigarette.
The Washington Post reported on a Utah man who suffered from one of these lung illnesses, reported as being otherwise healthy and an outdoors enthusiast, and then had some serious health problems. I want to read a piece of this report. Quote, within days, Alexander Mitchell had gone from being a 20-year-old hiking enthusiast to being kept alive by two machines forcing air into and out of his lungs and oxygenating his blood outside of his body. Quote, he went from being sick to being on death's door in literally 2 days, recalled his father, Daniel Mitchell, as he struggled to grasp the unthinkable. Quote, the doctor said he was dying. In all honesty, I was preparing to plan a funeral for my child. I wept and wept for this boy. The story continues, 6 weeks after he left the hospital, Mitchell has resumed hiking, but with his lung capacity diminished by 25%, he doesn't go for long or as often as he used to. He also struggles with his short-term memory. Doctors say they're not sure whether he will fully recover. Jack, what does it mean to have your lung capacity diminished by 25%?
Sure. So his life-saving intervention was not only a traditional mechanical ventilator, which is able to do the work of the lungs, but he actually went on a form of ECMO, which is very similar to what people go on when they have bypass surgery for open heart surgery for their heart. So losing 25% of your lung capacity would diminish your exercise capacity. And we don't know whether this young man, and I have worked with some of the doctors who cared for him in Utah in the past. He may have the good fortune of recovering back up to 100%, but almost all of us would notice if we lost a quarter of our lung capacity in a short period of time.
And Julian, we're talking about a 20-year-old here, and this plays into what the statistic that you shared with us a little earlier, that it appears that the people most impacted by this new wave of lung illnesses are 18 to 35 years old. So why do you think that demographic is so attracted to this trend?
The marketing is a huge problem. 7 out of 10 teenagers have been basically targeted in the marketing campaigns and exposed to it. And that's the gateway to trying something that is harmless, quote unquote, as many people have proposed it to be. You're not smoking in all the 7,000 byproducts of combustion, you're just vaping. It's steam. It's harmless, but that's not the reality. And now we're actually seeing it. And unfortunately, we're seeing it with 5 deaths and 450 cases that should not be happening.
I want to remind the listeners that we did book Ray's story, the founder and CEO of the Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association, on the segment today. We had him briefly via Skype and lost him as soon as we turned to him, and we've been trying to reconnect by phone. We have not yet been able to make that connection to have the industry's rebuttal to this, so we apologize for that. And we will try to get Ray on in the last couple of minutes that we have for this segment to go on. Julian, now the CDC is urging people not to use e-cigarettes. Does that indicate an escalation in the concern about this new activity that people are turning to?
Well, it's simply denotes the unknown.
I gotcha.
It just, we don't know of the many moving parts, cartridges, oils, atomizers, any part of the e-cigarette could be the culprit of this reaction to the lungs. And so it just, the pendulum has swung to the point where now everybody's recommended not to use it. And now some people that have been using it appropriately to quit or smoking cessation are going to hesitate to use it, and maybe they'll fall back into smoking again. So that is what we shouldn't have been put into at this point in time. FDA, other regulations should have had more of an oversight as to how vaping was conducted in the country.
And Jack, you shared a little bit about the thought process that goes into your field when you start to identify some issues that are related to multiple people suffering from similar health problems, and when you decide whether to send that information onto the CDC. But now the CDC has released some commentary about this issue. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means when the CDC takes a stand like this? You doctors would send information to them, but what happens between then and the statement?
Yeah, I guess I would offer at least the optimism that I believe between academia and researchers in academia, coupled with CDC and possibly assistance from industry, that we really will eventually understand very well the nature of the lung injury that's happening from vaporized inhalants. So I think we will get to the bottom of it. The CDC is one of those important resources. Public health departments, governors around the country have also been recommending cessation. And even the New England Journal of Medicine this past week had both an article and an editorial calling for people to express the appropriate initial caution and stop using e-cigarettes and other substitutes.
Ray Story, the Tobacco Vapor Electronics Cigarette Association founder and CEO, is back on the line. Ray, we're so sorry for those technical problems, and we are almost out of time now that we have you on, but I do want to make sure you get an opportunity to respond. What is your response to the CDC urging people not to use e-cigarettes?
Well, first of all, I appreciate it, and I wanted to thank Dr. Catron and Dr. Parker. Obviously, they're very knowledgeable in this field, but I want to stress a couple of points real quick. First of all, the vitamin E is not found in e-cigarettes as a whole. It is basically only found in those products that contain THC extras. And so, you know, look, you're talking to the individual that made vaping legal in the U.S. and Europe. I believe in this product so that I can combat the 8 million unnecessary deaths that we continue to see in the tobacco category. And so that's the reason. Obviously, we see an epidemic now on certain issues because of the fact that one particular company targets marketed children and went as far as giving speeches at schools to provide a platform for their company to state that, you know, smoking is bad for you, but that this particular product is perfectly okay. I've never been a proponent of that. I created this category when I sued the FDA and the Justice Department, Department of Health and Human Services, to try to create an alternative to conventional tobacco, a vastly less harmful alternative. The fact that we need to regulate it, I'm all on board with that. It's sad that we see that marijuana and THC and all these products out there all of a sudden are now getting legal standings in some of these states when it's clear that this is a drug. Nicotine is a natural occurring alkaloid, and so it's found in many different things. The second largest, highest containing a product of the nicotine, and it is tomatoes. It's very addictive, but this product was designed to get people off of tobacco cigarettes. And now we see that because of lack of regulation, we see that there's other constituents being put in these products that are simply unacceptable. And the overall understanding of the product today is that it's vastly less harmful. And all the tests that have been done actually back that up. So I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater here. I want people to be obviously very cautious where they buy these products and buy them from reputable companies. But at the end of the day, this issue was created by an irresponsible player that put products on the market that were not tested. And then obviously you have some other entities that put way too much nicotine in it.
And Ray, we've just got 30 seconds left, and I want to make sure that I understand. It sounds like you are definitely trying to separate the regular tobacco vaping industry from the growing marijuana industry. So, what are your regrets then about giving access in North America and Europe to this tool that's now being used to consume THC and possibly being linked to these illnesses?
Well, first of all, the actual product today was never manufactured to really vaporize oils. The cotton and the wick and the heating element designed today is not capable of doing that very efficiently. But people will always try new things. And when there's a will, there's a way. And obviously, when there's money to be made, they're going to do whatever it takes. With that said, new technology regulation has to be actually built to handle this category. And right now, it appears that everybody's slow walking it a little bit, although marijuana and THC seems to be legal all over the place, and especially those states that are looking for bigger tax bases. And that's the sad part. This product will absolutely save millions of lives if it's used correctly and purchased from those companies that stand behind their product.
Ray,
it's vastly less harmful.
Thank you so much. Ray Story is the Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association founder and CEO. I apologize again for our technical problems with getting you on the show a little bit earlier. I also want to thank our doctors who joined us today, Dr. Julian Guitron from the University of Cincinnati, who's here in the studio. Thank you for being here. And also on the phone with us has been West Virginia University Dr. Jack Parker. Jack, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.